And so today I'm going to talk about toric mirror symmetry, but in a slightly, I guess, slightly different light than how it's like, you know, traditionally being discussed. So this is already kind of like very well studied part of the story of mirror symmetry. And I'm going to begin by introducing GIT windows, and then we'll move to the mirror side later on and see how it manifests on the mirror side. Okay, so this is this talk is based on a paper of myself currently available upon request, and a joint paper with Peng Zhou currently in progress. So let me just begin with a little bit of motivation. So why I'm thinking about this problem. So this is like very naive question that I was asking myself as a grad student, like, is there a GIT perspective of mirror symmetry? By that, I mean, there are just many interesting algebraic varieties that can be constructed from geometric invariant theory quotient. And these varieties are known to have mirrors. For example, we can construct toric varieties by taking the GIT quotient of an affine space by a torus. And there are other varieties that are studied in mirror symmetry that can also be constructed from GIT, such as Grassmannians. It's like, you know, you can obtain Grassmannian by taking the GIT quotient of affine space by GLK. And also, you know, the GIT kind of story is also built into hyperkähler quotient. If the group's a torus, we can get hypertoric varieties by taking the GIT quotient of the moment map pre-image. And this is studied by McBreen-Webster and Gamage McBreen-Webster. And yeah, so, and by mirror symmetry for GIT quotients, I wanted to get mirrors or study the mirrors of these varieties exactly the way they're constructed. So we have some, you know, supposedly very simple space the group is acting on, and we can look at, you know, equivariant mirror symmetry for that space, and then using what is called GIT windows, we can proceed from there and see if we can get the mirror symmetry for the GIT quotients. So that's kind of the idea, and it turns out it works for torics. And the idea is to proceed, as I mentioned, is just using by using GIT windows and looking at, you know, equivariant mirrors of this space the group is acting on. Okay, I haven't really defined this notion, but just to give you an idea what GIT windows are. So people are interested in derived category of coherent sheaves on algebraic varieties. And there is a well-known Balanchine exceptional collection for coherent sheaves on P1 given by, you know, O of K, O of K plus one for arbitrary K, right? So this is very well known. If you think of P1 as a GIT quotient, we obtain P1 by taking C star action or GM action on C2 by weight 1, 1. And after removing the unstable locus, which is the zero, which is just the origin here, after throwing away the origin, we get the quotient as P1. So this category is only kind of a quotient category. So this I star is kind of like a localization here. What GIT windows are able to do is that it picks a particular subcategory inside, you know, the equivariant category of coherent sheaves that restricts equivalently to the semi-stable to the equivariant derived category of the semi-stable locus, which descends to the derived category of GIT quotients. So that's basically the idea. So for this Balanchine collection, what we can do here is just we can take the equivariant line bundles generated, equivariant line bundles O of K and O of K plus one, and look at the subcategory generated by these line bundles. And when you apply I upper star C2 minus zero, we just get an equivalence of categories. And, you know, this way we obtain a presentation of this seemingly complicated category in general. We are looking at, you know, this thing called GIT windows. So that's basically the idea. Let me just be more precise and recall what GIT quotients are. So given an algebraic group acting on, say, a closed subvariety of, say, smooth subvariety of A to the M cross P to the N, and this is known as, like, I think people call it projective over affine variety. So, you know, typically if you just take the quotient, the topology gets disjoint. So we need, you know, we need a better quotient, but the GIT quotient is not canonical and involves in a choice of equivariant line bundles. So for a particular choice of equivariant line bundle, what it does is that it kind of, you know, picks, you know, this, the bad locus. It removes the bad locus from the ambient space X that destroys the topology of the quotient. So we ended up with the complement of these bad loci, and we only take the quotient from the good loci, which we call the semi-stable locus here. And of course, we can just take directly take the quotient stack by G from the semi-stable locus and just get a quotient stack, and the GIT quotient is the coarse moduli space of the quotient stack. So we'll not talk about this space in particular because we want to study, we can kind of look at everything from the equivariant perspective. So that all I'm thinking about right now is that I have a space X where G is acting on. I have a subvariety and I'm looking at like everything G equivariantly. So what are windows then? It's basically an ansatz saying that, okay, we can try to find a collection of full subcategories inside the coherent sheaf category of the global quotient stack, such that I upper star restricts to the semi-stable locus equivalently. So means that like the composition is an equivalence. In particular, you know, these subcategories should be simple enough for us to understand in the sense that suppose that we're in the situation that these windows are given by some generators, then if we know this is true, then we can just take some window subcategory and this subcategory will give a clear computation or presentation of the Dirac category of the GIT quotient, which is, in my opinion, very nice. So this story is, of course, very well studied in algebraic geometry. So here's the theorem by Hoppe-Leisner in 2013, I think it's his thesis, saying that, okay, we look at the setup, the ansatz, the window ansatz can be solved very generally by imposing some certain weight bounds on the objects. So you can just get a collection of subcategories by setting it up this way, by imposing some conditions on objects. So it's like, you know, anything, you take things that when you do the derived pullback to the fixed loci, you want the weight to be within a certain interval for each one parameter subgroup. This will be like, this is very general, but if you just look at the conditions, we still don't quite know what these subcategories are. But here's a much nicer and much better collection of windows that we can obtain in the particular setting. And this setting will apply to toric situations where we consider later on. So here's a theorem again by Hoppe-Leisner and Steven Sam back in 2016, saying that, okay, again, we consider the GIT quotient setup. If we have something that is a representation, just a representation of an algebraic group, if the representation is a type of representation called quasi-symmetric representation, which I'll define. Then this window subcategory, like these window subcategories, are nothing but subcategories generated by a certain set of objects prescribed by some combinatorial conditions. So these combinatorial conditions is basically what you do is that you take a zonotope that depends on the weight of the action of the maximal torus, and you look at all the lattice points prescribed by the zonotope. And you look at like the subcategory generated by the trivial line bundle tensoring with irreducibles of the characters prescribed within the zonotope, then these objects will give you the window category for this particular GIT quotient, class of GIT quotient we consider. And this is very nice because if you take, for example, just the torus itself acting on Cn, this kind of construction would give us a particular class of Clavielle toric varieties. And we're gonna assume that we're working with the torus from now on. But just to give you an idea, like what, you know, how to get the window objects. So suppose that this grid in the background is like the character lattice of the torus. What we do is that we look at like a certain zonotope, which if we shift it generically by a parameter delta, okay, then generic means that it doesn't really touch any of the boundary, the boundary of the zonotope doesn't touch any of the lattice point, then this prescribed like certain characters in the character lattice. And the window is just, is a subcategory generated by like irrep of these characters. Okay, if G is just a torus, then these are just a bunch of equivariant line bundles. So what have we said so far? We have said that given a torus action that is quasi-symmetric on Cn, then then we have like a particular set, combinatorially defined set of equivariant line bundles that computes the derived category of GIT quotients. Okay. And so here's just like a brief overview of my theorem. I basically just consider the mirror of everything that I just mentioned. So we still consider the quasi-symmetric representation setup for a torus. And we pick an equivariant line bundle for the GIT data. And we have the zonotope, we have the shift of the zonotope, everything stays the same. And we consider the mirror of the semi-stable locus. The mirror I'll construct later, this space is just the cotangent bundle of this flat manifold, which is the product of a torus with R to the K, where R to the K, you can think of it as the character lattice, the real space, real vector space spanned by the character lattice. And there is a particular Lagrangian skeleton sitting inside this cotangent bundle. And the data here is going to be considered as the equivariant mirror of the semi-stable locus. Okay. And the theorem I get is that the partially wrapped Fukaya category of this mirror can be computed by a window subcategory defined almost the same way as like how it's defined on the other side. Here's the script A just means like symplectic side or like A model, B means the B model. And I'm just thinking of these like as sub, window subcategories of, either the A side coherent sheaf category or the B side partially wrapped category. So this is a rough sketch of the theorem. Actually, you may ask that whether this window subcategory on the A side, on the symplectic side, can be made geometric. It turns out it can. So particular window subcategory, although I haven't defined, I mentioned in theorem A, can be realized as a Lagrangian skeleton itself inside the same space. And furthermore, this skeleton, so here's the theorem with Peng Zhou. So the first statement in the theorem is that the window subcategory on A side can be realized as a skeleton. And the second claim that we have is that this skeleton just sees the GIT chamber decomposition of R to the K, and it interpolates basically the GIT, like the mirror skeleton for all generic GIT quotients. Okay, so I haven't defined anything yet, so let me just define some things. First, let me just define quasi-symmetry. Suppose X is a representation of a torus, and the torus acts by some weight vectors in the weight lattice. Here's a definition. X is a quasi-symmetric representation of the torus. If the sum of the weights is zero along each straight line in the real vector space spanned by the lattice. Here's an example of quasi-symmetry. Here's a non-example of quasi-symmetry. So here we have five vectors. I should say like repetition of these weight vectors are allowed here. The example is that we have five vectors. If you look along this straight line, the sum of the weights is zero. If you look on this straight line, the sum of weights is still zero. So this is quasi-symmetric, but this one is not. As you can see, if you check the definition, look along the straight line, we only have one vector, but there is no opposite vector. So, but this example is still somewhat interesting. This is like, I should just say that quasi-symmetric cases are just like, a special class of the case where like the sum of the weights equals to zero. So if you're familiar with hyperkähler geometry, you can think of like quasi-symmetry as something between hyperkähler and Calabi-Yau. This is like Calabi-Yau, but this is not quasi-symmetric or hyperkähler. So, all right, so let's just define this zonotope. What is a zonotope? Well, it's a Minkowski sum of a bunch of intervals. So this particular zonotope that we have in the theorem is defined by taking 1/2 of the Minkowski sum of all the weights of the torus action. Okay, equivalently, we can also think of it as follows. We take the unit n cube in R to the n, we send it to R to the k by sending like the basis vector to beta I. And the image of the unit cube is this zonotope that we're talking about. And we want to take half of it. So, all right, so these are just some definitions. So we can study this zonotope even further. There are a lot of interesting combinatorial properties of this nabla here. So for any, if you pick a one parameter subgroup of the torus action, you look at the lambda width of this, so for instance, if you have like a covector here, you can look at like, the inequality that defines, the area of, or like the region of nabla within these hyperplanes. The lambda width of the zonotope is precisely the sum of all positive lambda weights. Okay, so if you look at lambda in this direction, like the lambda width here is like the sum of all possible lambda weights. By quasi-symmetry, you can just kind of invert it and take the sum of all negative lambda weights and take the opposite of that, or negate that by quasi-symmetry, these are equal. Okay, so here's an example that we can get. We'll see this zonotope a lot for the rest of the talk. So let's just consider a GM2 action on that, I guess our, yeah, but let's consider GM2 action on C6. Okay, so we have six weight vectors. This is like a, this is actually not quasi-symmetric, but this is just a symmetric example. You know, let GM squared act on C6 by these weights. Okay, now if you take the Minkowski sum of these weights, we get this polytope here. And if you shift it by generically by some parameter in the real vector space, we get a bunch of objects. Okay, so now I'm going to move to the mirror side and tell you how these mirrors are constructed. So this is actually very well known. The toric story is very well known. The only new flavor here is that how do we incorporate equivariance inside kind of like the mirror construction. So what the way we think about this, you know, torus action on Cn is that we first embed it into the maximal torus and let the maximal torus act on the affine space by multiplication, coordinate wise multiplication. So this is given by some like n by k matrix. So yeah, basically like we just embed the like a smaller torus into the maximal torus, and this action is going to be induced by the maximal torus action by multiplication. So what we can do here is that we can just, instead of looking at the character and co-character lattice for T beta, we can look at the character and co-character lattice of the maximal torus and kind of induce things from there. In particular, we have a short exact sequence of vector spaces. So in the middle, we have this MR tilde, which is the character lattice of the maximal torus. And if you take the dual, we get a co-character lattice. If you still remember how the zonotope is defined, this is defined by taking the image of the unit n cubed to r to the k and take one half of that. And actually, this particular map sending the basis vector to beta I is like the map that is like very important, the map that, you know, gave us some sort of interpolation between you know, T beta action or T beta equivariance and T max equivariance. Okay, so we can take the kernel of this map and take the dual, and we can embed the co-character lattice of T beta into the co-character lattice of the bigger thing. So overall, these sequences will just, you know, give us a way to not only construct mirrors, but, you know, obtain like, kind of like, you know, different versions or different levels of equivariance. Okay. So let me, I think it's good time to pause for a second and pick up some questions. Let me see if there's any questions.
Sorry, can you just scroll back up a little bit? I just want to get clear in my mind. Yeah.
So wait, this. Yeah. So
how had you defined the M sub R and the N sub R originally? I think I just lost track of that.
Okay. So this thing is going to be, so we're taking the torus, we're taking the, the torus, and we're taking the character lattice, which is hom from T beta to GM.
Mm-hmm.
And we're taking the real, I mean, the MR, I guess it's not this, it's not this MR here. This MR here has nothing to do with the care. Well, this is just the kernel. I'm just giving it a name. I call it MR.
Oh, okay.
But we're just okay. Like that's,
so these sequences are the definition of M sub R and N sub R.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And I mean, they're going to be the character and co-character lattices of the quotient.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
So,
which is the, yeah. Great, okay, great.
Good.
Anyone else have any questions? All right, I guess you can start again whenever you're ready.
Okay, so let me just proceed with this construction. We construct it, I mean, we can construct mirrors just from kind of the data, the toric data of the semi-stable locus. And the equivariant data given by these short exact sequences. In particular, if you look at the fan, so I should say that X is toric and we're looking at a toric action. So the semi-stable locus, if you think about it, it's just some, it's the complement of the union of some subspaces. So this thing by itself is also toric. So we can look at the toric fan living in NR tilde, right? Because of the maximal torus is just, you know, GM to the N. So we look at the fan for these varieties denoted by like sigma semi-stable and sigma N for X. And these fans are living in NR tilde. And so here's the construction to get the mirrors. Remember, the mirror always consists of the cotangent bundle of some flat manifold and a skeleton inside there. So, okay. So this construction was originally due to Fang Liu, Truman, and Zaslow. It says that, okay, for any subfan inside sigma n, so actually we can just do this by labeling the cones inside of the fan by subset of like the element set, like from one to n, okay. So the construction is saying for every cone inside here, we can take the orthogonal of that cone in MR tilde, shifted by the lattice and take the product with the negative cone. And this way we get a singular Lagrangian inside T star of MR tilde. So this lambda sigma tilde I just constructed is going to be considered the maximal torus equivariant mirror or mirror skeleton inside this space. So, and to get the T beta equivariant mirror, all we have to do is to mod everything by M, which I just defined. So remember that M is like the kernel and we're just taking the kernel lattice and mod these real spaces, mod this real space by the kernel lattice. And we get T star of T to M, N minus A cross R to the K. So this is just like by modding up a sublattice, we are rolling up like this direction and leaving some direction open, and the equivariance is incorporated in there. So here's just a general kind of picture how these will correspond to each other. We have like a fan, a subfan of Cn. So the maximal torus equivariant mirror is just, you know, this thing I just constructed. And if you want less equivariance, you take a quotient. And if you want less and less equivariant, if you want a non-equivariant, you know, if you just want the non-equivariant mirror, you just like mod out by the maximal lattice. And so this thing will be T star T to the N. This thing will be T star T to the N minus K cross R to the K. This MR tilde is gonna be R to the N. So, yeah, so from the bottom up, like the more equivariance you want, the more universal the abelian cover that you want to take in this skeletal construction. Okay, so now with the construction, we're able to just exploit the toric structure of the semi-stable locus and obtain a skeleton, or we denote it as semi-stable skeleton, T beta equivariant semi-stable skeleton inside this mirror space. Okay. So now to proceed, we need to know some particular objects inside this cotangent bundle. That way we're able to calculate the partially wrapped Foucault category. So I'm not going to define partially wrapped Foucault category in this talk, but I'll just say which objects are important to us. And what are the generating objects? So here are some Lagrangians that I want to consider on this page. So let's just denote W by partially wrapped Foucault category. The goal of this page is to describe describe the important objects that we need to know for this category. So let's first stratify MR tilde. So we can just divide it into boxes. So we take all the characters, we take all the subset of N, and for each box, we can take the relevant interior of each orthogonal of the cone. And that would give us a very natural stratification of MR tilde. So, there is a very particular collection of objects that exist with the skeleton, I guess, with a full skeleton for CN. That is for any character M and for any subset of N, there is a small Lagrangian disk living basically at the contact, whose boundary is let me just repeat that sentence. So there is a small Lagrangian disk whose boundary is around an arbitrary point of the contact infinity of the stratum of the Lagrangian skeleton defined by this pair. Okay, so here's an example. Here's this R2 example. We're dividing R2 into certain boxes, and for each box, we have the stratification given by the origin, x-axis, y-axis, and this interior. So if we look at the skeleton for C2, right, we have this two-dimensional conormal direction directions sitting over the origin, and these one-dimensional conormal directions over each one-dimensional stratum and the zero section here. And these disks, these Lagrangian disks, exist for certain, for each stratum. For each stratum, we can look at a small Lagrangian linking disk around an arbitrary, arbitrary smooth point at its contact infinity. So, presumably we have just a disk over this stratum. We have something over here. We have something over here, and we have the cotangent fiber. So these objects are basically transverse to the stratum of the skeleton. Okay, so the notation is just that if you're not familiar with this kind of hair notation for Lagrangian skeletons, you just remember that the linking disk living kind of over infinity, these are just small objects transverse to the hair. Okay, so I just described some Lagrangians, and because I'm not defining the partially wrapped Foucault category, I'm just going to say a theorem in this this paper by Ganatra, Part, and Shinney, where they defined the Foucault partially wrapped Foucault category for this type of spaces. The theorem is saying that given a skeleton, given a T star of something, these linking disks generate the category. Okay, so these are basically all the important objects that we have to think about. So now I can reformulate my theorem more precisely. Remember that, So remember that on the universal cover, we have a linking disk. It's like we have linking disks at these characters. If we mod by M, we can think of, we can kind of like organize all the linking disks by like, you know, character inside, you know, the character for T beta and the same subset of N. So when we mod by M, by this like kernel lattice, we are able to obtain a one-to-one correspondence between the lattice point in here and, you know, the index of the linking disk. So it makes sense that for each kind of character lattice, we can obtain a linking disk in the cotangent bundle after modding out by the kernel lattice. Okay, so the theorem now is going to be more clear. So I'm looking at a mirror symmetry setup. I'm considering the equivariant coherent sheaves for Cn, and I'm considering the partially wrapped Foucaille category with respect to the mirror skeleton for Cn. And I can define the window subcategory by looking at all the cotangent fibers with, you know, whose characters are inside this window zonotope. And I look at this particular subcategory, and it turns out we can obtain the following diagram. So the top of this diagram is basically the window equivalence theorem that I stated at the very beginning. And the bottom of the theorem is something that we have to prove. So we have defined a particular subcategory over this. There is a canonical functor in symplectic geometry called stop removal, meaning that if you take any subskeleton inside a skeleton, there is a localization functor. You just kind of take the same object and kind of like everything that's supported on the complement will become trivial objects. The theorem says that we have the following commutative diagram where we get the window equivalence on the Foucaille side that is compatible with mirror symmetry. Okay, so this is the main statement. Here's an example of what I mean. We look at GM action. We can take a very trivial example by looking at GM action on C2. The action is given by weight 1 and negative 1, okay? So if you calculate what the zonotope is inside the lattice, it's just the interval from 0 to 1. So if you shift it generically, you just get 1 point. But presumably, this point should give us like the window that generates the quotient, which is, you know, isomorphic to C, but let's look at how it works. So we look at the mirror to C2, described by R2, with the hair direction being, you know, the skeleton direction, and I'm just stratifying it using different colors. And when you mod out by the kernel lattice, which is, the direction is 1, -1, so the kernel lattice is kind of in this direction. We're modding out that direction, we're getting the cylinder that looks like this, okay. And we're saying, okay, we take the object that correspond to, you know, characters in the window. If I pick, say, well, there's only 1 point in the window, so we can assume that this is like the, you know, this is the cotangent fiber that corresponds to a point in the window. After stop removal, it's going to generate everything. And we can see from this picture very clearly that if you remove you know, the part of the unstable skeleton and only keep the stable part of the skeleton and push this cotangent fiber here, we are able to obtain, like, we're basically able to obtain everything. And I should say that in the, you know, in like, in these particular cases that we'll consider, everything will be generated by cotangent fibers. So these other linking disks, like we can obtain them by some sequences, but really everything is generated by cotangent fibers. So all we do is that we can just take a particular like set of window object, window cotangent fibers inside the mirror space, and they will be able to calculate, they will be able to calculate the semi-stable skeleton. Okay. So so I'm just gonna sketch the proof a little bit. So there are some arrows that we have to take care of. On top, we have this equivalence. So first of all, when I ask people, they're saying like, oh, this is just equivariant mirror symmetry, but this is not the same equivariance, so we still have to do something to obtain, you know, this equivalence here. And it turns out we can just like use restriction induction adjointness to get mirror symmetry for us, like equivariant mirror symmetry with respect to a smaller torus. So first of all, we have, you know, we can calculate the mirror symmetry here by looking at matching up generators and then use restriction induction process to get this diagram. The important part of the theorem is this arrow here. It's like, how do we get a geometric proof? You're taking some subcategory, some full subcategories of objects. How do we know that like this is fully faithful and surjective, right? So fully faithfulness just follows from direct computation. So it just turns out that because we're just, I mean, looking at stop removal is a localization. So we're just like looking at, you know, whether there are any new morphisms like created by the localization process that are inside the window. Okay, equivalently is like saying, you know, all the new morphisms, in order to prove fully faithfulness, all the new morphisms that is created by stop removal has to be outside the window. Okay. So we can just inspect the calculation of Rapp-Fleur cohomology. So we start from a cotangent fiber. We just wrap it maximally, kind of like wrap it until it can't be wrapped anymore. So this skeleton is mirrored to C2 minus zero. If you're an algebraic geometer, you will know that there is some backward morphism if you look at the equivariant derived category. And actually, this thing is visible here. If you wrap a cotangent fiber passing this stop, you will get some twisted Lagrangian with a degree shift. And basically this calculation tells you which morphism you get by, you know, just looking at, you know, what kind of like which boxes the cofinal sequence would eventually occupy. Okay, so in this particular case, if you just keep wrapping it more, you will get the third quadrant and the first quadrant with the degree, with some degree shift in the third quadrant, which is kind of, yeah, that matches up with this example. But I should warn you that this is not a quasi-symmetric example, but this phenomenon kind of happens generally. And we can just calculate, we can just inspect all the backward morphism, all the backward morphisms here created by stop removal. And after just looking at its projection under, and after sending it to, you know, to R to the K, we can say that if stop removal impacts or like creates new morphism, then the image has to be outside the window. So the window width is going to be important here. So it's like, you look at, you know, which boxes you know, the cofinal sequence would eventually occupy, it turns out the image of these boxes have to be, you know, there's just no way like this window zonotope would contain, the image would contain like a more, you know, a vector from here to anything here. So that's basically the idea or summary of the idea. Surjectivity, this is kind of similar to the proof given by Hoppe-Leisner and Sam. The key is using the Kazuo resolution of the linking disk that is being removed after like moving to semi-stable locus. So suppose we have some unstable linking disk, an unstable stratum. Just similar to how you resolve the unstable like subspace or like unstable structure sheaf of the subspace that's unstable, we can use this like Kazuo resolution. And this is this makes sense because there's a theorem of wrapping exact sequence saying that you can get an exact sequence by passing an object. So you kind of factor out the linking disk each time you pass a stop, if the stop ever existed. So iteratively, this process is going to give you a Kazuo type resolution that says this, you know, you get this complex, this Kazuo complex that is isomorphic to the linking disk that's removed. But what does it say? You look at, you know, these window objects. This Kazuo complex can just be used to generate all the neighboring window. So for example, if you look at the Kazuo complex, you know, formed by these four objects, right? Because the linking disks become trivial after stop removal, the Kazuo sequence becomes exact. That means like this object can be generated by like the rest of it. So by just like shifting these windows using different one parameter subgroups, we will be able to say that, you know, all the new object that you get is part of some Kazuo, is part of this like Kazuo complex, which means like, you know, this new object can be generated by the old ones that are already in the window. Okay. And this part is where we use quasi-symmetry. And the fully faithfulness doesn't really use quasi-symmetry, but it just uses like this weight bound kind of condition. Okay, so that's basically the sketch of the proof of the theorem. I don't have much time left, so I'll just say briefly what theorem B is about. Remember that in theorem B, we realized the window category as a particular skeleton. And here's how the picture looks like. So here's another feature of quasi-symmetry that I think is very meaningful. So what we can do is that we have this zonotope. We can take like the linear hyperplanes parallel to the facets of the zonotope. Okay, you know, we get like the linear hyperplane arrangement in R to the K, but this linear hyperplane arrangement is exactly like, you know, the kind of arrangement that gives you the wall and chamber, like the GIT chamber decomposition of, you know, of this real character space. So this is kind of a funny feature. So here's like theorem, here's this theorem with Peng Zhou. I'm just gonna state this like more precisely. So we're looking at like the window characters. Okay, what we can do is that we look at all the window characters and we look at the convex call of these objects, like in this example is over here. And so we can thicken this hyperplane arrangement, linear hyperplane arrangement by this bit and get a thick wall that has like kind of the same combinatorics, but we get a thick wall kind of like starting from the window region inside R to the K. Okay. And now what is the window skeleton then? The skeleton is just by looking at the singular support of the quadrant, like of the quadrant sheaf. So this is like for V, so if you have like point in R to the N, you look at the positive quadrant and you look at the singular support of that sheaf. And for each object here, we can just obtain a sheaf which is a coherent constructible image of these window objects in algebraic geometry. By taking the union of singular support, we just obtain a skeleton. This may look funny at the beginning because you're just taking basically just canonically, you're just like looking at kind of like the skeleton that gives you the correct category. But this skeleton actually sees some interesting combinatorics. So one thing that we can say is that, just almost by construction, you have to prove something, but almost by construction, the sheaf category, which, kind of Nadler-Zaslow, natural part and Shendi correspondence with the Foucault category of the cotangent bundle, the window category is exactly the kind of the sheaf, the wrapped sheaf category with respect to the skeleton we obtained. Furthermore, this window skeleton sees the combinatorics of the GIT chamber decomposition. So here is how the statement looks like. So you look at the window skeleton, which is a skeleton over this R to the K, R to the K over this region, and we have some thick wall. It turns out if you look at a certain chamber in the complement over these places and restrict your skeleton to any point in the chamber, it matches up with the non-equivariant semi-stable skeleton. It's like when you take a fiber over a point, you get a skeleton inside the torus T to the N minus K. So this skeleton restricted to like points in each chamber will give you that semi-stable skeleton. Furthermore, it's just something that interpolates like all the semi-stable skeletons. Furthermore, I mean, for any Y, if you pick any fiber, like this doesn't really care about, I mean, basically it doesn't matter like which point you pick on the base. When you restrict to a single fiber, the category is going to be equivalent. So what do we get is that we get a skeleton that really interpolates all these like GIT quotients and all of them. So although like these are drastically different skeletons, we will have like something that interpolates, all of them via this like family, via this deformation family. Okay. Right. I think one last thing, this is gonna be the last page. One last thing I wanna mention is that for quasi-symmetric cases, there are just like more things, more nice things about it that I don't understand as of now. One of them is that you can look at the periodic affine hyperplane arrangement of the facets, of the hyperplane supporting the facets. You just like kind of like shift them up by the lattice. And this has to do with the complex parameter space or Kähler moduli space that are like relevant to mirror symmetry. Particularly, this is a result of Alex Kite in 2017. It says the complex moduli space in the sense of like GKZ hypergeometric systems. This is exactly, the complement. So you complexify everything and take the hyperplane complement mod out by the lattice, this is exactly the complex moduli space that we consider. Here are more stuff discovered by Spanko Vandenberg. Is that, okay, not only we can consider the generic deltas, but we can just consider all deltas, including those ones that are like contained in the wall. There's just no problem defining a subcategory like this by like including all the boundary lattice points as well. You know, the window categories, like we put all of these categories together, these categories will define some sort of extension of the local system of categories over this space. It's like some sort of perverse extension, you know, in some combinatorial, like, you know, in the combinatorial, following the combinatorial definition. So yeah, one corollary of this A-side window theorem is that, you know, by just carrying over the structure, we just get the same perverse extension. So what you can think of this business is that, you know, mirror symmetry predicts kind of like diffeomorphism between the Kähler moduli and the complex moduli. And you have like some local system of categories over them. And by carrying over these structures, they kind of extend to a perverse, they kind of have some sort of perverse extension. But I still don't know like the geometric meaning of this statement precisely. So yeah, of course I've only talked about the torics, but the story, same story should hold if we can understand a mirror of like a global quotient stack like this for non-abelian G. Once we understand mirror of like X mod G stack, the quotient stack X mod G, the window story should carry over. But I'm not able to answer these questions right now. So I guess I'll just end this talk. Thank you.
Great. Thanks so much. Did anybody have questions? So I had a question, which is, you know, so I, you know, I thought a bit about the similar kind of questions for the hypertoric case. And, you know, at least one of the stories I told myself about what was going on is in Telemann's ICM address, he has this story about equivariance being a function to the dual torus and doing GIT quotient on the A side somehow corresponding to taking some fiber of that map on the B side. So, but in your picture, it seemed to be modding out by a lattice. Can you say anything about what the relationship there is?
Well, first of all, like this is kind of the other direction. This is like the B to A picture instead of the A to B picture. I believe there might be some, okay. So this one feature I think Telemann mentioned in his paper was that the B to A direction, the action, like the action in this, you know, in, on this, like we're looking at the B side action and try to induce like on A side, right? But the action on the B side is not a topological action. And so I don't really know how the story would work out here. He did mention in a remark that like for the toric case, we just obtain something like this. One thing I can think of is that, so take the B-side, take the coherent, okay, take the coherent sheaf category of Cn, okay. The T action would induce kind of a categorical action on coherent sheaf category of Cn. And what we can try to do is that you look at the mirror category, you look at just, you know, the mirror category to Cn, and that category, like whatever the equivariant mirror is, like there is an action, there is some action on the Fukaya category. And I believe this, you know, this equivariant mirror story is just like very particular case of realizing like some of the invariance, you know, kind of invariant category for that action. Not sure if that makes sense to you, but yeah, this is kind of like what I sort of have in mind. So it's like, it's just that T action is just some action on categories, and you can look at the invariant category of that thing, which is supposed which is supposed to be the equivariant category of equivariant objects, right? But in this case, the equivariant category of equivariant objects, just these will just be like, these will be just like these, you know, abelian covers. But I'm not sure how to make sense of the hyperkähler story in this direction. I think you've said something in your paper that, you know, the hyperkähler story is still like, it's still kind of related to like, to this kind of like Schober business. So you have, you obtained like some sort of Schober for the hyperkähler.
Yeah, I mean, we also, we also get a Schober there, but like, you know, somehow, like I don't claim, I'm not sure Telemann understands this stuff really when you try to pin him down on it, but certainly I don't. But somehow the story I told myself is when you do a hypertoric variety, you have some moment map and you have a torus action and you're taking a fiber of the moment map, modding out by the torus, and that under duality, those things should switch places. And that was like, okay, I understand that story. That makes sense. And just somehow that's not, I'm not seeing half of that story here,
but no, that is a very difficult paper. I don't know if you have like any other reference that kind of explains what's going on, but like that's kind of like everything I've looked at. So
Ben, I think that the story is supposed to be that a coherent, so the like the original thing that he wrote down is that if you had like a topological S1 action. That's the same thing as an action of the Fukaya category of T star S1 with its convolution monoidal structure.
As you like to tell us.
And ordinary mirror symmetry swaps that with coherent sheaves on C star with respect to its normal tensor monoidal structure. So that statement tells you that these topological S1 categories are the same thing as categories that live over C star.
Yeah.
Or have a map to C star. So then the thing that you want to do to get it in the other direction is that a category with a coherent GM action is the same thing as a category with the action. I guess there's actually two distinct presentations. So one of which is you could think of it as a cat, and I'm not sure which one's going to be the good one, but one of which is it's a category that lives over BC star. So it's a module for quasi-coherent sheaves on BC star with its tensor action. And like one, and you could ask for what is like a mirror description of that, or you could say it's an action, it's a category with an action of quasi-coherent sheaves on C star with respect to the convolution. And one of those ends up being local systems on the same thing as local systems on S1 with its tensor action.
Okay.
So basically you end up getting that it's the same as a category over with an action of local systems.
I guess, you know, somehow, right, like based on the talk, what I would be looking for is something about an action of one of the lattices.
The lattices.
The torus.
Well, I think that would be the BC star one. Right, because like
because
sheaves on BC star is the same thing as sheaves on the lattice, so it'd be something with an action of Z.
Yeah, okay.
But, well, so I think that that's the natural one.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay, thank you. So, that was it. So I guess I didn't have time to go through many details.
It's okay. That's
basically like the kind of main line of the story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the paper is for the details and the talk is to convince people to read the paper.
Yeah. This was a really awesome talk.
Thank you.
Yeah. Are there any other questions?
By the way, does anyone know, I'm just curious, does anyone know what the mirror of X mod G is for some non, so like how to think about this type of,
Justin?
I don't know off the top of my head
of
a good example. I mean, I know that, like, I'd have to think about it. Okay. Or I'd have to think about for a good example. The real person you should ask is Davide.
Well, Davide is here. Davide, what's the dual of X mod G? Speak up. Hopefully he hasn't, you know, fallen asleep.
The dual in which, in the mirror, sorry.
2D mirror.
The 2D mirror.
So.
G is abelian.
Not abelian.
Not abelian.
No, the talk was about G being abelian. So now we want to know about non-abelian.
Yeah, so say it's like a Kähler quiver variety. So like half of a Nakajima variety.
But I don't understand what do you mean when you say the mirror.
Uh-oh.
I mean, is it obvious that there is a good notion of the mirror? I mean, right, the way it works, right, you have some family of to do mirror symmetry, right? You have some family of Lagrangian tori, and you say, okay, I identify them with the points in the mirror manifold. But couldn't I have multiple families? Or
sure.
Then, as I say, it's not obvious that you always have a mirror which is a sigma model, right? Or
sure.
No, I just.
Well, I mean, I don't think it exists. Is, you know, that's an answer you could give us. You know, we wouldn't be able to gainsay you.
No, okay. The mirror as a quantum field theory exists by definition. It just flip what they call a symmetry. Right.
And but that's not a satisfying answer. So
that's not a satisfying answer.
Yeah. Some kind of sigma model description of that. I mean, you know, in any special cases, or, you know, feel free to assume that G is GLN or something.
Yeah. If anyone can tell me like what's going on with this case, I'll be very grateful. Cause like this is basically the case where,
I mean, one could try to perhaps get an answer to this by thinking about 3D gauge theory. Right.
I agree.
I just didn't have an example like at hand, like of like colliding two boundary conditions in 3D.
Right. So if you have, I mean, X as a G symmetry, you can promote to boundary condition for the 3D theory. And apply 3D mirror symmetry.
Sorry, but can I say it again? The last question was, what is the dual of what Cn to the power?
And the usual presentation of the Grassmannian is a GIT quotient. I mean, yeah, that it seems like it really should be in Telemann or something.
And then
maybe not the.
What's the question? I mean, you wanted to do as what?
Isn't the 2D mirrored to a Grassmannian, a Landau-Ginzburg model into a...
Yeah, no, that's right. And you can recover it by taking the Coulomb branch or the 3D theory and figuring out what are the mirror to the boundary conditions, which sort of restrict right. star Cn to Cn.
I mean, I think we're thinking about the stack. Like, I think we want the dual of the stack, which yeah. then hopefully will somehow contain information about the Grassmannian. But like, I think the hope is that it will actually be simpler to find some sort of dual for the stack.
But I'm confused what kind of object is it supposed to be. I mean, for the Grassmannian itself, it is some kind of Landau-Ginzburg model. And here will be what? I mean, it's an object.
I mean, I think the hope would be some kind of symplectic manifold with a skeleton that you're doing partially wrapped Foucaille on.
I mean, that's what the Landau-Ginzburg model is, though.
Yeah. I mean, either you have something, it's a Landau-Ginzburg model, or you have like something with a skeleton. So, but I don't know either of these prescriptions for this type of space. So, or this is like GLK equivariant mirror of like C and cross K. So I think there is something going on, but it may or may not exist. If it doesn't exist.
No, I think you can write something down, like Davide said, like if you thought hard enough about the Coulomb branch of the right 3D gauge theory, but I just don't know the answer off the top of my head.
I mean, if n is large enough, you can even have literally the mirror of the 3D theory, which is another gauge theory. Mm. Then you will have to understand if you can give a description of the Neumann boundary conditions in that mirror theory, which is not a guarantee.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's safe to assume that n is at least 2k. Okay.
Yeah, so in that case, it's a good theory. You need some statement about, you can, I'm not giving a SV, but you can break down the problem into simpler pieces, perhaps. Understanding the mirror of some boundary conditions of this theory as the boundary condition of the 3D mirror.
Yeah.
I mean, Ben, basically like what it comes down to is you have to write down the GKLO and then you have to try and reconstruct the potential from the presentation of the GKLO.
Like 3D mirror, okay.
Yeah, like basically like what happens, right, is that you've got this particular simple module in like the category, like in the D modules on like some quiver variety, and then you want to figure out what the module is over the Coulomb branch, and that module is basically like a quantum version of the Jacobian ring for the potential for that mirror. But like you have to like then like reverse engineer from the Jacobian ring like what the potential was, like it's like not super, it's not like super easy to like to answer the question. Like you can do this in the abelian cases, but it's like not like a very easy. Like I can't do it. Like
so sorry, just slow down here. You're saying a GKLO for the Coulomb branch of this theory or its 3D dual?
Of this theory.
Of the...
Yeah, so you look at so you write down like what the vector space in the group that she's interested in, yeah. And you have to look at the Coulomb branch of that theory, and there's a GKLO module corresponding to this particular Lagrangian.
Sure.
And what I'm saying is that GKLO module knows the potential W.
Okay.
For the Landau-Ginzburg mirror, but actually all it really knows is just what's the Jacobian ring for that potential.
And how does it know that?
like literally it is the module literally is the Jacobian.
The module over
Over the Coulomb branch. Like the underlying vector space literally is the
Okay. So if I'm presenting it as a Jacobian ring, I'm writing it as a quotient of a polynomial ring by some polynomials.
Yeah. And then it'll also have like some shift operators. Like it's a quantum Jacobian ring or whatever. I'm just saying that this isn't like an easy thing to answer, and I can't do it on the on the fly. And like it's not clear that there's enough information there to answer the question.
Okay.
Like basically there's like you could get some tiny shadow, but it's not.
Okay. Well, it's just like, you know, up to you have a GKLO representation of that Coulomb branch. That part I understand very well, and I know what you mean, and I could like do calculations with it. So it's sort of just kind of like, okay, well, what's the extra bit that I'm missing after that? Of, you know, how like, you know, okay, I have a polynomial ring, I have this Coulomb branch acting on it by some shift type operators. And then what do I do? How, like, that polynomial ring is a Jacobian when I present it as some kind of quotient of some bigger polynomial ring? Is that what you mean?
I guess what I'm saying is that the, I'm just saying that like from that GKLO module, you can get the quantum cohomology of this quotient V mod G, or the equivariant quantum cohomology. And there's a formula for equivariant quantum cohomology in terms of this potential.
I see. Okay. I see. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know how to do this in any like non-toric example.
And I can imagine different ways to engineer it essentially theory in 3D.
Yeah.
Like the mirror and getting different answers, which ultimately are equivalent, but in a non-trivial way. Which is part of what I feel confused when I hear the mirror, because, you know.
I have a question for Jesse about this. Yeah. It's a sub-question. Do you know any presentations of Calabi-Yau threefolds given by non-abelian quotients? Some simple example I might think about.
I
can do abelian. I know a few abelian quotients, but
compact or non-compact?
Non-compact. I can only cook up non-compact examples.
But
well, my question doesn't matter so much.
I mean, I think like one thing. Yeah, this is something you can get.
Wasn't there something called the Safian Calabi-Yau? Or
you can get this. This is open Calabi-Yau.
So some local Calabi-Yau.
Yeah, local. This is local P2. You can get local P2 by looking at the action 1, 1. So okay, C star action on
right.
C4 right. With weight 1, 1, 1, -3.
Right, but this is an abelian example. I'm wondering where we have some non-abelian quotient.
I don't know.
I also don't know. That's why I'm out, if anybody knows.
Wasn't the Rodland Calabi-Yau trying to...
Rodland? Can you say the name?
Or the Pfaffian Calabi-Yau, also called?
I'm not familiar with it.
I remember a paper by Gomez and others where they were a computer partition where they were using the sphere partition function to compute some interesting things. I think they were using there was an non-abelian example.
I'll take a look. Just because I ask, I mean, you might be able to study wall crossing in that Calabi-Yau and get a sense of what the object that composes all of them together in this stacky sense should be.
The sphere partition function is a logical metric, probably. I don't know. I need to check. Anyway, I seem to remember some calculations evolving.
All of the examples I've computed anything about are abelian quotients, like for example, the result conifold. local P2s.
All right, does that cover everyone's questions?
I'd actually like to ask a couple, like another question. Right. So I was confused about the relationship between, it was what you were explaining at the end about the relationship between the window skeleton and the skeleton for the line bundles in different chambers of the.
Yes, like this picture?
Yeah. The thing I was confused about is this part where you're taking the fibers.
Mm-hmm.
Where are those fiber skeletons living?
T to the n minus k. So, okay, this is the part of the story I didn't explain very clearly, but I mean, you get an equivalence when you restrict to fibers.
Right, and then I was just trying to make sure that I knew that that was the, okay, and that's the gonna be the place that I would normally think of the skeleton as living.
Yes.
Like if
you
I
can
was just-
think of, you can think of it as like the non-equivariant mirror skeleton to the GIT quotient.
Right, okay, yeah. That's great. This is, and sorry, and so the way that you did this, let me just try and see if I can make sure that I understood your strategy, is you first looked at the equivariant mirror of C to the N with its maximal torus?
Yes.
Then you like worked out what formally happened when you passed to an open subset, but kept the torus the same, like basically throughout the unstable. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And that corresponded on the Landau-Ginzburg side to stop removal.
Yes.
And then the second thing that you worked out was the de-equivariantization corresponded to quotienting by a lattice.
Yeah, that's right.
And then once you had those two pieces, then you had a full. That didn't involve windows in any way, right? Am I correct?
I mean, the calculation, you can just do the calculation in general. But the calculation is actually just a geometric way to see windows work.
I see. Okay, that was very cool.
All right. Well, if that covers everyone's questions, thanks so much for the great talk again. So we can clap a little.
Thank you guys for the discussion.